2025 was a breakthrough year for the far-right AfD party here in Germany. They came second in the national elections earlier in the year, and now they're leading in some opinion polls. And in important ways, they're defining the political agenda. Well, 2026 could be another year of breakthroughs, with the AfD potentially winning control of state governments for the first time in its history. Those breakthroughs, it hopes, will get it closer to its real goal of national power. So on today's Berlin Briefing, we're going to take you through the key elections that are coming up and why they matter so much. We'll break down the implications for Germany's national government, which is already under massive pressure. And finally, we'll look at some wild cards, like the Trump administration getting a taste for German politics. We have our resident AfD watcher, Matthew Moore, here in the studio, and we have Kate Brady from the Washington Post, who's a DW alum, so it's great to have you back, Kate. Matt, let's kind of set the scene first of all. So where do things stand with the AfD? How strong are they right now?
Well, as you mentioned, they came second in the national elections in February 2025. And since then, they've really just grown and strengthened opinion polls to the point where they, for the first time in their history, were top of the opinion polls, some opinion polls in Germany. And so I think they are growing in strength, really, and enjoying a lot of support among the public. And as you see, 2026 is going to be a mega election year in Germany with five state elections where they will be hoping to really make even more, break more ground and kind of enjoy more success on those state level.
So basically this party that has only been around for a bit more than a decade, yeah, is basically the strongest that it's ever been. Yeah, but Kate, it's also incredibly controversial. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of categorized as being on the far right of politics. Like, why is this party so strong? Like, what is it about this moment that is making it their moment?
Well, I think we need to look back a little bit without getting into too much of the detail. But, you know, this party mentioned 2013, the party was founded. And that was originally as a Eurosceptic party. And we've seen this transformation over the past decade. And one of the bits...
So Eurosceptic kind of being opposed to European integration, even opposed to the single currency.
Exactly.
Euro,
and so, we see that now that there's still this much more, you know, the economic policy that the party would seek where they in power would be much more of a nationalist economic policy as well. So much less EU integration. But we've seen the party move more and more to the right. And one of the big turning points was Merkel's open door migration policy at the height of the so-called migration crisis of 2015. So about a decade ago, that's when we really saw the AfD have what even they call, you know, their first initial breakthrough year. And it's in, by the time we got into 2016, we saw all of these state elections that are coming up this year. The 10 years ago, that was when some of those states were first, when we first saw the AfD getting seats in the state level governments, in the state level parliaments, I should say.
And that was in the wake of this large number of refugees coming in from Syria and other countries during the wars that were taking place there.
Exactly. And we've seen off the back of that another, then just a chain of crises, whether it was the pandemic, you know, but actually it was interesting before the pandemic, we saw the AfD tapping into climate policy and climate skepticism. That kind of went out the window to a certain degree with the pandemic coming in. And then we had the energy crisis off the back of, you know, Germany's energy crisis after the full-scale invasion of Ukraine by Russia and the effects of that energy crisis and the cost of living in Germany. And so, and what continues still to be a main center point for the party, of course, is migration policy in Germany. And we saw, especially this year in 2025, you know, the framing by the AfD of it's been 10 years since Merkel's open door policy. This is what has happened, or this is what hasn't happened. And so then the party has used that as a kind of a marker as well in really recent German history to say this is what has become of the country, as they kind of put it.
So it's kind of part of this kind of like right wing, sort of broadly sort of nationalist. I mean, there's a series of conferences called National Conservatism, isn't it? And they sometimes call themselves patriotic parties. Yeah, they're sort of nationalist, anti-immigration, skeptical about international cooperation. So, I mean, kind of like a, you know, a form of Trumpism that is here in Europe, right, Matt? You could broadly say that about the platform.
Yeah, and that's why they've actually managed to build alliances with the MAGA movement in recent months. And that's why you see people like J.D. Vance saying that parties in Germany should be cooperating and working with the AfD is why you saw in the national security strategy of the State Department published before Christmas this line about supporting so-called patriotic parties in Europe, because they're aligned on certain things like the opposition to the European Union, these supranational organisations. Yeah. They're aligned on that, but they're also aligned on something that goes beyond that, which is this idea that we are in a civilizational conflict. Mm-hmm. And that's when it comes back to mass migration, which was some of the things that J.D. Vance talked about at the Munich Security Conference in February in this country last year. And so when you're aligned on these things where you think that mass immigration is a threat to Western civilization, then you can, that's where they're finding these partnerships, and that's why they're able to ally with the MAGA movement, even though there are some contradictions in there with the AfD's platform and the MAGA movement, which I don't think we need to get into today, but that's where that alignment comes. And so the AfD is basically, as you say, is touching on all those issues, Kate, and basically offering the voters in Germany something fundamentally different to what they've been offered from the other parties and radically different.
We should mention, though, just also, you know, you were asking why, what is so controversial about this party as well, you know. We have to mention that the fact that they are now classified as a far-right extremist party by domestic intelligence here in Germany, and that has only fueled the calls as well in the country, in Germany, to actually ban the party, which is an extremely complicated debate and an extremely complicated process as well, if that were to ever even be kind of kick-started. Yeah. But yeah, that is a debate that is ongoing, and something, going back to what you were saying about kind of allies in the US as well, that's certainly ruffled some feathers over there as well, and the kind of MAGA movement has kind of, you know, wanted to try to protect the AfD in a way, and defend the AfD in a sense when it comes to these calls.
Yeah. They call it political repression, you know, they see it as political repression. Yeah. And then often, you know, you people want to talk about that and say what's going on in Germany, and then you have to remind them that Germany's history, whereby a democratic, a party was elected democratically, used that mandate to then overthrow the state, and basically
talking about the
National Socialists in the 1930s. The history, the lesson of that in the post-war era was to build in a domestic intelligence agency which would raise the alarm if they thought that there was a party that had similar desires in Germany in the post-war era. And that is what they're saying.
Yeah.
Kind of in roundabout terms, that's what they're saying about the AfD.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that kind of laid to, and these are things we've talked about in many other episodes of Berlin Briefing as well, but we've set the scene here. Yeah, so this is a very controversial party, but it's getting stronger and stronger.
Yeah. Global business isn't just charts and suits.
It's a messy, unpredictable soap opera set on a global stage.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Cassandra.
If you think the economy is boring, you've been watching the wrong show.
In our weekly podcast, The Dip, we'll help you connect the dots.
That's DW's The Dip, available wherever you get your podcasts.
So this year, 2026, five state elections taking place. I've got a list of them here. There are two in West Germany, there are two in Eastern Germany, and there's also going to be one in Berlin, So we're going to look at the most important of these elections. But first of all, I want to kind of set the scene on just like what we're talking about here. These are state elections. People might think, well, why do we even care about, you know, state elections? But Matt, first of all, quickly give us that. So there are 16 federal states in Germany. Like, how are these states, you know, what are they? How are they governed?
So, yeah, as you say, every legislative period, the voters in these states will get a chance to elect their Landtag, the local parliament. And often what happens, actually, is that no one party will win outright power. So they have to form a coalition after the election with other parties. And that is often a very drawn out process, and it leads to compromise. It'll be interesting to see in the elections next year what happens when it comes in the post-election period, whether the AfD can form a majority with any party or even govern outright. And that is, it could well do that in a couple of the states. It's looking like it's going to be the strongest party by some way.
And these states, I mean, they have a lot of power. Yeah, I mean, also, I mean, a bit like in the United States, you have the federal states where an awful lot of power is kind of devolved to that level. in Germany, I mean, I was looking at data that in terms of government spending, like roughly half is federal government, mm-hmm. but a good third is on this level of the federal states. And then the last bit is on the very local level. So as we said, Kate, so there are five elections coming up this year in these states, but it's two that are really attracting the most mm-hmm. attention. And these are in these eastern German states. So why is that? Why are these two elections the ones that are really getting the most attention?
Okay, so well, the two states are Saxony-Anhalt and Mecklenburg-Western Pomerania. We'll just stick to MecPom, I think, for so, all of our
And both of those are both kind of not those... far from Berlin. One exactly. to the west, one to the north of Berlin.
Yeah, yeah. Both have pretty small populations, but, you know, it's worth pointing out the AfD has always had a stronger showing since its existence in states that were formerly part of former East Germany.
So former communist East Germany. Why is that? What's the short version? I mean, it's complex... Kind of,
it's very complex. There's
that,
no but. One single answer. And I'm sure we'll get onto how they're now as well tapping into Western states as well. But in the East, you know, there was a whole mix of circumstances, I would say, that kind of opened the door to the AfD. More, let's say, wider than in Western states. And, you know, after the kind of in... or rather in the aftermath of reunification, there wasn't really that deep-rooted alliance to some of the parties, especially to the CDU-CSU, that you made the Conservatives that you had in the West, even with the Social Democrats, for example. And then, of course, you also had this growing disappointment. So, you know, we're looking at about 10 years ago, it's about 25 years since reunification at the time that the AfD was founded. Already then, there was... a very strong sentiment of disappointment among a lot of voters in these former eastern states, this feeling of being left behind and that a lot of people hadn't really benefited or if any from reunification or if anything they'd become worse off, yeah. especially economically.
And I mean, I was looking at some data which I found which kind of bears that out, because if you look at the chart of... if you look at a ranking of the 16 federal states ranked by the GDP per capita, the GDP economic output per head, mm-hmm. the five bottom states are the five eastern states that we're talking about. And the very bottom state, Saxony-Anhalt, is the state where currently the AfD is strongest. So there's kind of yeah. like a correlation, lower GDP per capita, greater support for the yeah. AfD, which also kind of tallies with the east-west divide here. Yeah.
Exactly. And then on top of that as well, you of course had this, I guess what you can describe as maybe an immigration paradox in a way, in that actually some of these eastern states, especially after 2015, they have some of the lower numbers of migration or mm-hmm. or even before 2015 had lower numbers of migrants in those states compared to Western states. And yet still that was where the AfD managed to tap in with its anti-migrant, yeah. anti-migration rhetoric. And it was, like I said, more this paradox of where there were fewer migrants, there was actually more this kind of fear and openness to, you could even say, fear-mongering about migrants as well, which is something that the AfD managed to tap yeah. into among some voters there.
That's also connected to the kind of demographic collapse in the East. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, is there's a phenomenon whereby people are leaving and they're worried. People are looking around them and seeing their community shrink, mm-hmm. hearing in the news about all these immigrants coming, and then thinking, are we losing... our population here and my towns and cities are changing in the East, but you know, newcomers are coming into the country and we're losing control. And I think yeah. As you said, I mean, it's a mix of factors, but I do think that's that's a very strong one.
And so that would be, as we look to these elections, that would be one of the issues. Like, I mean, what are the issues that are kind of driving people or driving AfD support, say, particularly in these two eastern states this year?
So Germany's in its third year of stagnation, no economic growth, which is really, it's the mood in the country as a whole is pretty grim. Abysmal.
Yeah.
It's really spoiled. And that's for me, that is up there with immigration for the issues that are driving vote shift to the AfD, because I don't think you can underestimate this sense, especially in the country, of they're seeing every month or every week data come out about this plant closing, 10,000 jobs being lost in this part of the yeah. country. That, coupled with the war in Ukraine, what's happening in the United States with tariff wars, that is creating a real sense of confusion, chaos among the German population, concern about the future. And so I think those are the issues that the AfD is really hitting on. And they've said that bluntly. And every time I listen to Alice Weidel, the co-leader of the party, in Parliament, when she talks to the press, she comes back to, so often it will come back to two things. A, that the promises that the current government of Friedrich Merz made in the election to crack down on asylum applicants, people seeking asylum in Germany, that he's broken that promise. And the other thing is that he promised an economic revival, and we haven't seen that yet. So huge pressure on the government to deliver on that front, especially, I think. But those are the main issues.
Yeah. So you've you've had years of not just stagnation, but stagflation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You've had stagnation at the same time as high prices. Yeah. And of course, that is almost always toxic. So those are some of the issues that are driving support. And of course, you know, the FD will say, you know, we want to cut energy prices by just importing Russian gas again, just kind of shed many of the sanctions that were imposed on Russia because of the war, and also deport large numbers of immigrants, feeling that there are simply too many in Germany. So Kate, I mean, I've got the figures here. In these two states, so there are two, Saxony-Anhalt and Mecklenburg, or MECPOM is the short version. I think we're probably focused on Saxony-Anhalt today, right? Because this is the one where the AfD are the highest in the polls, to kind of talk through. So AfD, latest poll that I saw, 40% support, which doesn't maybe sound all that much to many ears, but in the highly fragmented German political scene, that is significant support, yeah? So, Kate, let's talk through what happens if they get a number like that, 40-ish% in this election, which is going to be early September, right? Mm-hmm. So what happens?
Uproar, absolutely. Yeah. But then we see this after every election recently. So there's lots of different combinations that could happen. Effectively, it depends on whether they can get an absolute majority or not, and that will depend on...
So majority of the seats in Parliament.
Exactly.
That's different from, you don't need 50% of the votes to get...
Exactly. We're thinking more about 45%, but it will really depend on how the other parties fare in that particular election.
So there are some kinks in the election arithmetic always.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it wouldn't be a German election without having to get your abacus out or whatever. the big question is, you know, will they be able to, A, govern alone, which would be a huge upset, you know, then it would definitely, that would cement Germany's first AfD state premier.
Yeah. Just governing alone without needing a coalition partner in this fragmented political scene is very unusual in Germany, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the entire system, both at, you know, the state and federal level, is made to create coalitions, you know, and that was very, you know, deliberate in Germany's post-war history, the way in which this country's parliamentary system works, to avoid one party kind of governing effectively on its own. So you have that possibility. At the same time, you have the possibility that the AfD is the strongest party, which we've already actually seen in Thuringia in the east. Mm-hmm. But instead, we ended up with a bizarre so-called Blackberry coalition there, which is made up of Germany. For any of the listeners that maybe aren't familiar with this, there's lots of very inventive names based on the colours of different parties for the different coalitions. And so there you might end up with the, you know, in Thuringia, for example, there was the CDU, a leftist populist party, the BSW, and the SPD.
So that's centre-right, centre-left, and leftist populist.
Yes.
So you end up with very uncomfortable bedfellows.
Exactly. And it's more of a coalition of convenience. That convenience being that all of these parties do not want to work with the AfD. That's this firewall between the other parties and the AfD.
And so, this is because the AfD is considered basically taboo, too radical to touch. Don't form a coalition with
it. And the question is always, how long is this firewall going to stay standing? And the closest party to the AfD on the political spectrum is the CDU-CSU, the Conservatives. And that is where some of there's the most debate within those two parties. There's an alliance of two conservative parties about whether or not should we maybe open the door a little bit at state level, or, you know, even more local level to the AfD. But then there's also voices within the Conservative Party that say, no, you know, give them an inch and they'll take a mile kind of attitude.
Yeah, but they're worried. There's the argument that if you go into any sort of cooperation with the AfD, then you're risk splitting your party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There'll be the people in the moderate wing.
Exactly. So I mean, it's huge. You say, of course, the Christian Democrats, the Conservatives, are maybe the closest to the AfD because they are centre right and the AfD is more far right. But you know, many within the Conservatives would say the AfD are on a different planet from us because they're so friendly to Russia.
Yeah.
They feel that they're too friendly to China. They generally, you know, have so many of these positions that from a conservative point of view might seem kind of anti-constitutional, against the spirit of the German constitution. And yet, on some core issues like migration, I mean, the Conservatives under Friedrich Merz, the current chancellor, have become much more anti-migration in terms of their kind of, at least the tone of their communication.
Yeah, I mean,
but it's a mixed message.
It's a mixed message.
Let's not go down that rabbit hole too much. But basically, it's a dilemma for the Conservatives, yeah?
Massive.
Do they either say, okay, we keep this firewall, we will never touch the AfD with a barge pole, or do we say, okay, well, on this level, like in, you know, a state, you have to be pragmatic and actually start working with them. So let's just quickly get back to the scenarios that we may have. So there's one scenario, AfD wins an absolute majority, they take over that state, they are in control. Next consideration would be they're the biggest party, they don't have a majority. That means the other parties have to cobble a coalition together to form a government. Otherwise, the state is ungovernable, yeah?
Right. And then we'd have to work out a name for that coalition. Would it be a blackberry or strawberry?
Yeah, yeah.
I think that will look really difficult on paper because of the fact that the CDU, the Conservatives, have also said that they will not work with the far-left party, Die Linke, in Germany. And so that's where it gets complicated. And then even if they can cobble it together, do they have enough, actually? We'll find that. We'll find that out. But the real pressure will be on the CDU to either support a minority AfD government.
Or kind of passively support it. Yeah, sort of
well,
saying,
you can't
we'll help
really
you on
passively support it because you kind of, when, you know, at some point within 30 to 60 days after the election, they will have to sit down in parliament and each party will be able to put forward their candidate for minister, president, the governor, if you like, of the state. And they will probably, the AfD will probably win the most votes, lose that vote, we can say. And then there will be a big debate about, well, we can't have this impasse for too long. And it will be a debate that's happening locally, but also on the national level. And then there will be a lot of pressure on the Conservatives to maybe in private as well. It's a secret ballot, if I'm not mistaken. It's a secret ballot, at least it was in previous cases in previous states, to vote for the AfD candidate. And so that pressure will be huge. And maybe he gets through and then there'll be a debate about, well, what can you actually do if you don't have a functioning majority, a stable majority? But if that happens, it would lead to, as you said, uproar. It would lead to huge problems, I think, within the coalition here in Berlin as well.
Yeah, because that would be a big question as well, is if the CDU was even in any way, shape or form in Saxony-Anhalt, even slightly open to the idea of forming some kind of coalition with the AfD, you know, what effect is that going to have on the federal government, the government which the CDU, CSU, the Conservatives are leading in partnership with the Social Democrats, who have a very strict no AfD line. So, you know, I think all of this, especially when it comes to the other parties being pushed into this scenario where they're having to cobble together potentially really bizarre coalitions that wouldn't be very stable, it just completely underlines the disruption that the AfD is causing to the system through their growing popularity, through their strength, without potentially even being in power.
And this has been one of the consequences of the fragmentation of the political scene that you've had in Germany over the last 20, 30 years, that you have more and more parties, which means that it's harder and harder for a party to get a majority in parliament, whether on the national level or on the state level, which means you get more and more of these coalition governments which are across kind of basic ideological divides. So, I mean, we were just talking earlier, Matt, the last national government that Germany had where you could say it was a kind of a coherent ideological kind of pairing between two parties, it was 2009 to 2013. Yeah, that was Angela Merkel's government when she was with the kind of the pro-business Free Democrats. So for the last 12 years, you've had kind of hodgepodge governments of parties mm-hmm. that don't really get on fundamentally on quite some...
Well, they've had to make compromises.
They've had to make big compromises. And this... And they fight. Mm-hmm. And this... turns off the voters and they think, you guys fight, you don't get anything done. Yeah.
So, and that's exactly what we're seeing right now with this coalition government as well. And I think that's something, you know, you were talking about what are some of the main issues going into these state elections. And it's become so clear even in recent years that the state elections have been very focused on federal issues, but also about, for the AFD in particular, but also about holding the federal government to account and the idea of saying to voters, this government isn't capable of giving you what you'd hoped for or what they'd promised in the last election.
So basically a state election can become a sort of a referendum on the national government. Okay, let's get on to the implications. We've kind of touched on a couple already, but I want to kind of break them down and talk about, you know, politics, but also policy. Like, what could be the implications if the AFD, say, do, first of all, like, take over one of these states, say, Saxony-Anhalt? Matt, first of all, if the AFD, you know, if you control a state government, you know, what does that enable you to do? Like, what are the powers you have? Like, what does that change?
Yeah, so I think what you would see if the AFD were to govern in Saxony-Anhalt, they would start to go on a massive campaign to defund a lot of the civic organizations there that are, in their view, are spreading kind of left-wing propaganda. Maybe it's pro-democracy groups there in Saxony-Anhalt, and maybe it's groups that are dealing with LGBTQ awareness issues. All of that, there would be a massive cut to those organizations. They would also have power over the education system there. And for that, for the AFD, that is really important. They think that the education system in Germany has kind of gone crazy, as they would say. You know, you see this in kind of in a lot of their speeches, that they say that, you know, there's this, as they would say, it's woke.
Yeah.
And so
a lot of the stuff that we see from the Trump administration in the US, mm-hmm. the same kind of like culture war kind of issues.
Yeah. They would also have power over the police force there. They would also have the power over the Office for the Protection of the Constitution, the very organization in Saxony-Anhalt that has declared the party, has found the party to be a right-wing extremist threat to the Constitution.
Yeah. So we have to stop for a moment there. So basically, Germany has these domestic intelligence services, which also each individual state has its own branch of it, and it's called the Office for the Protection of the Constitution. You talked about this earlier, the kind of post-war logic to this, that you have to watch threats to Germany's democratic constitution like a hawk. But each state has one of these. So if you gain control of a state, you potentially have influence over the body that is potentially even watching the AFD. Yeah? So an interesting situation.
Exactly. Yeah. And they would be able to replace the head of that organization, certain members within the organization. They could replace civil servants and appoint their own people. Same goes for the police force there. So they would have the interior ministry. And therefore, you can have a lot of power there if you have the interior ministry. So it's maybe not, you know, I don't want to overstate the power that they would have with a state of Saxony-Anhalt is, I think, 2 million population, so really small. But you would start to get a sense very quickly of what the AFD wants to do when it's in power. And that's why I think it will be a really informative situation should that happen.
But it would also bring challenges for the AFD, because opposition politics, kind of complaining about stuff, is always easier than governing, isn't it? So suddenly they would, you know, be in a position of responsibility. I mean, do you detect any sort of mixed feelings? You've talked to a lot of AFD people recently. If you do detect any mixed feelings, any sort of heebie-jeebies about taking on responsibility for a whole federal state?
I think from the conversation I've had, that that risk is very apparent to them. I mean, any party going into any kind of coalition or any kind of government knows that, okay, we're in the limelight now. We're not in the opposition anymore. And you see that at federal level, you see that at state level. And they're very aware of that. And it's clear that they are preparing for that eventuality because this is also a party that doesn't have any kind of governing experience at any real level. And also a lot of even senior, semi-senior members who haven't been in politics for a very long time at all. And so this is about educating their own people as well right now to prepare them for these kind of positions. And the AFD knows that if they do want to fulfill their ambitions, which is to indeed, of course, to govern at federal level, that they obviously don't want to mess up their chance if they're given it in Saxony-Anhalt. So that is something that they're very much aware of, is my feeling.
And what about back up to the national level, Matt, sort of policy implications? I mean, we've seen, you know, the increasing influence of the AfD on, you know, the political agenda, really. So in terms of, you know, migration, on other issues too, you know, if we see the AfD that is coming out of this year stronger in all of these states, potentially even in power in one or even two, how does that start to affect, how does that affect national politics? Does that start to kind of further narrow the options in terms of policy for the national government?
Before I answer that question, I would just say with the AfD and the situation in Saxony-Anhalt, you know, I hear people in the party saying they would rather not win that election outright because of that risk that Kate talked about. And I think the ideal scenario for them, and this is interesting, would be to be the strongest party by some way, and the focus and the pressure to be on the Conservatives to crumble, to break that firewall. Mm-hmm. Because not only does that help them because they say, look, we're the strongest party, but we can't govern because nobody else is the anti-democratic, it puts huge pressure on their biggest opponent, really, to answer this question, what are we going to do? And so, and we know that that's the strategy on the national level. The national level, the strategy is to attack the CDU and show that there's no other party, to attack the CDU and say that they're doing a bad job of the economy because they've been compromised by the SPD, the Social Democrats, who they're in coalition with, but also to attack them to the point that when they're voters, and the fundamental aim is to break down that firewall. So if you win outright, the debate about the firewall is gone until the next election. Whereas if you win, but you don't win outright, then the debate about the firewall becomes ever more present. And so with the national picture, I think it's just going to put that debate will obviously have a strain here in Berlin because it distracts as well. I find these elections, as great as they are for democracy, they often become a huge distraction from the government of the day in Berlin, from just getting things done, because it's constantly reacting, constantly thinking, okay, what are we going to say, for example, on a Ukraine peace deal? One of the issues there is, does Germany send troops to Ukraine to secure a peace deal, peacekeeping forces? The AfD...
Very theoretical, of course, but it could arise, yeah.
Yeah, but you know, they've got to talk about it, and so you've got to be committed to it or you're not committed to it. You can't be on the fence. The AfD has until now been firmly against that, has used that to drum up support in the East, where there is broad scepticism about support for Ukraine. Now, Alice Weidel has said...
Head of the AfD,
just before Christmas, said, we can have a discussion about that. She's opening just a little crack in the door there. Now, the reason she's saying that is because she knows she's got to win support in the West, where there are two state elections, where it's a slightly different attitude. She also knows that if Donald Trump wants a peace deal and the MAGA movement want a peace deal, the AfD can't be the one standing in the way of that in the future. Yeah. So you're seeing slightly how these big issues about war in Ukraine can affect the domestic policy and the ability of the government of the day to act.
Yeah. Let's move on to final few wildcards that could kind of scramble the picture we've been talking about. First of all, Kate. So we've been talking about the AfD on the up and up, like getting stronger and stronger. Is there anything that could blow all this up? Any kind of minefields they could walk into?
Oh God,
that you see coming.
Break it up, yeah. I do, yeah. I think it's interesting. And you know, while I said that they've been growing support in the national polls, they lost a point in the support just before. They lost a point in
one
support.
One percentage point. So from what, 26?
27 to 26.
Yeah.
They're around the 27-26 mark, right? Depending on which poll you look at, they lost a point in one of the polls which I consider to be most accurate in terms of broadly reflecting the results on election day. And I was trying to work out why is that. And the only plausible answer I could come up with was that the Conservatives had made a concerted effort in the previous 4 to 6 weeks to attack the party and its leadership as Alice Weidel, the co-leader, is saying that why does she live in Switzerland if she wants to run Germany?
One of
you know,
the
she lives in family.
Facts about Switzerland, about both.
She lives in Switzerland with her partner and her children. But you know, she insists that she pays tax here and her residence is in Germany. The other thing that they've attacked the party for is this idea that they are doing the bidding of Russia, that they are have been infiltrated by Russia. And there's some, you know, the evidence that the opposition, the Conservatives will show for that will be things like, you know, that the party's submitting lots and lots and lots of so-called Kleine Anfragen, so questions, inquiries to parliaments, both at the national and at the state level, that things that about infrastructure, drone defence systems, things like that, which would not necessarily be in the remit of those parliaments, but they say that that is designed to help Russia, to help Germany's enemies. And then you've seen kind of incidences where individuals have been accused of taking bribes from pro-Russian oligarchs. And so they say that that amounts to a kind of party that is doing the bidding of Russia. So that was the only thing, that concerted effort in the media to draw those links was the only thing I could come up with.
Yeah.
The other thing, which is a big, big thing, I think, is if the German government spending on infrastructure, if they can get any sort of economic growth, good, positive economic growth figures in the start of the year, in the summer, that might have some sort of impact on the mood in the country. And that might also be something that helps the CDU and the government parties in those state elections.
And certainly, I mean, the German government is desperate for economic growth to really kind of come back, right? Okay, so there's a risks to the AfD. Kate, upside, in terms of kind of wild cards, we've seen the US administration started kind of with J.D. Vance in early 2025 at the Munich Security Conference with this speech, and he met Alice Weidel, the AfD leader, but kind of behind closed doors. Also, we had Elon Musk, obviously very closely associated with the Trump administration, actively supporting the AfD at the last election. What do you see coming down the line in terms of kind of this the kind of cozying up between the MAGA world and the AfD world?
Yeah, well, it's growing. And in recent weeks and months, we've seen, you know, some real senior figures in the AfD flying to DC, attending events with the, you know, the Young Republicans as well in New York. And a lot of, you know, closed door meetings going on as well. And at least, you know, what we're hearing is, you know, at first, I think the assumption was, you know, this is maybe the AfD trying to learn from MAGA, learn from Trump's administration, how they, with similar tactics, with similar rhetoric, with similar issues, how they could gain power at federal level, especially here in Germany too. But I think what's become clear through the conversations I've had is that this is very much about preparing for what they see, what AfD sees as inevitable, which is them coming into power and preparing those transatlantic ties already and preparing, that kind of cooperation. They still, despite being, and this is why there were a lot of raised eyebrows at first, because the AfD has always been much more skeptical of the US generally. That's shifted since Trump has returned to the White House. And I would still say that the AfD still has, you know, at least that NATO skepticism is still there. But this is about creating a transatlantic alliance that works for the AfD, for their economic purposes especially. And that's only going to grow, this relationship between them. Because, you know, one thing we haven't mentioned as well is that it's very clear that the AfD is actually banking on this current federal government in Germany between the Conservatives and the Social Democrats, not actually making it through a full term to 2029. So that's something that the AfD is also working towards, not only winning these regional state elections, but they are hoping that, of course, through potentially some of the results in these state elections and potentially the coalitions that could be made, the coalitions that might not be made, everything that we've talked about, that will effectively further weaken this government at federal level to enable them to, you know, basically, effectively win an early election is what they're hoping for.
I think they would also like to see some of their newfound contacts and allies in Washington, use this camaraderie that they now have to come out and support the party should there be debate about going into government with them in Sachsen-Anhalt, in Saxony-Anhalt, whether it's as Marco Rubio or J.D. Vance saying, look, guys, why are you locking out the most popular party? Yeah. That's undemocratic. Mm. And so I think that there's that is the short term. But as you say, the long term strategy is to basically replace the conservatives in this country as the natural ally of the Republicans and to, as you say, learn kind of, I think there's this whole idea of like, how do you have an action plan that you can put into action in your first year, second year? Because I think the conservatives in the States realised that, or the Republicans realised with Trump the first time round, they weren't really as well prepared as they should have been. And the second time round, they were a lot more prepared.
And I guess, the next milestone to look out for contacts between AfD and MAGA World is the Munich Security Conference, where AfD delegates will be invited again, having been frozen out for the last couple of years but by the conference leadership. This was just recently announced. And of course, J.D. Vance made his big splash there in 2025. So we'll be watching that closely. But I think it's time to wrap it up. So thank you very much for watching here on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, any podcast provider that you listen to. And do please, if you're on YouTube, leave us a comment. And if you are on your podcast provider, please make sure that you've subscribed. And also do check out on DW.com if you haven't done this yet. Berlin Briefing also has a newsletter there, and that's a roundup of weekly news in Berlin. So that's a great one to subscribe. So check that out on DW.com. But for now, from Kate, Matt and me here in Berlin, have a good start to 2026.